Did we have a title for today? There we are then. Question of integrity. I looked in the dictionary to see what... Well, I knew what it meant. I wanted to see if the dictionary knew what it meant. You can laugh. I wonder if the dictionary knew what it meant, and I'll give you the dictionary definition of integrity. The quality of being honest and having strong moral principles. A question of being honest and having strong moral principles. I got the title. Jeff is on holiday down in Cornwall, but he sends out to the preachers the list of the programme of preaching 2 or 3 months beforehand, and I got the title. The email came on May the 2nd, which is an insignificant date to anybody else. A question of integrity. It was the very day that ex-President Donald Trump was convicted of all 34 charges of not being totally honest and regarding his finances and not having strong moral principles in his relationship with the porn star Stormy Daniels. Well, someone tried to assassinate him last week, didn't they? But I think he's doing a good job on it. He shot himself in the foot, really, didn't he? I'm not getting into politics in that sense, but that's the day I got the title, what it was going to be. A question of integrity. I started thinking about it a week or two afterwards, you know, thinking, July is approaching, I better... And I started thinking about it the day the general election was called here in the United Kingdom. Now, if ever you want to see integrity, being honest, politicians, how about that? And then I started putting pen to paper. The day after, there was a TV debate when Prime Minister then Sunak and Leader of the Opposition, Starmer, accused the other of lying, and the other accused the one of lying as well. A question of integrity. The quality of being honest and having strong moral principles. Well, history tells us that there's nothing new about integrity or a lack of integrity. There's nothing new. Most, if not all, professions and organisations fall victim to scandals and misdemeanours, not being totally honest, not having strong moral principles. Mr. Bates and the post office. Seemingly, the post office managers had their fingers in the tills for many, many years until we discovered that it was a scandal which was at a much higher level. It was at governmental level. The police, the ongoing, I better be careful what I say, although I don't think I'd reach, but it's an ongoing investigate in Manchester. We've seen the police and their activities in the airport, and the full video came out yesterday, and we I think the police constable was dismissed on has been on full pay for in Devon and Cornwall this last it was on the news this last week. Misdemeanors at a high level where you wouldn't expect. The medical profession, I'm glad that Sarah's gone out, but the medical profession, we hear of misdemeanors and not having strong moral... People like Jimmy Savile are allowed to go into the children's hospitals unaccompanied, without any checks on them at all. And so we could go on. The Olympics, how long is it going to be before there's going to be a drugs... What did we say? The quality of being honest is integrity. That someone tried to cheat in their Olympic... I'm not a prophet of doom, but I think it may well come that in most Olympics there's some misdemeanour is happening. Royalty, didn't need ID. Prince Andrew, allegedly, I'd better say that again. And so we could go on and we can point the finger here, there, and everywhere until we stop and think, well, even in churches, a question of integrity, a quality of being honest, and not having strong moral principles. The scandals and the misdemeanours that have taken place in the name of God, in the name of the churches. We have I've lost her name now, but she does Davina, long-lost family, and we see of these people who've been brought up in children's homes and they've been abused, people in homes for unmarried mothers where the nuns, the religious, the safe houses, so say, but they've not been so safe. And even on our doorstep, even in our village, front page news, misdemeanours in church life, the quality of being honest and having strong moral principles all through church history. This isn't anything new. This isn't anything new. All through history there has been a lack of integrity, and it is certainly evidenced by our passage that Harrison read for us from 1 Samuel chapter 2. At this time we're in a period known as the time of the judges. The time of the judges. And if you just turn back a page in your Bibles, before Samuel, we have the book of Ruth. And then, before Ruth, it's just four chapters, we have the book of Judges. And the very last verse of the book of Judges says this. It says, in those days, the days of the judges, Israel, the people of Israel, everyone did as he saw fit. In those days, have you got that? Judges, the last verse of the book of Judges. In those days, Israel, the country of Israel, had no king, there was no ruler, and everyone did as they saw fit. The old Bible says everyone did right in their own eyes. They did their own thing. It was a free-for-all. They said, you do it by my rules. I'm in charge of my own destiny. I'm not going to obey the rules. I make the rules. Everybody did as they saw fit. And with that in view, I'm going to give you a one-minute sermon, all right? So there's a nice thought. You can have a one-minute sermon now. And the one-minute sermon is this. The story is that the priesthood is lacking in integrity. They are not honest, and they are not principled. They don't have strong moral principles. They're involved in sex and scandal, and God says, I'm going to punish you if you don't amend your ways, and God did punish them. That is the sermon in 30 seconds. There was scandal in the church. God said, if you don't change, I'm going to punish you. And eventually, God did punish. That's exactly what happened. Now, that's the sermon, all right? So if you're happy with that, you can now go to sleep, because I'm going to give a little bit of background now to that genuinely is all we're going to look at. That's the three points this morning. But a little bit of background, might just a little bit of detail. The background is that the priesthood was hereditary, like the royal family. The late Queen Elizabeth, the late Queen, when she died, the throne passed on to her son, now King Charles. When King Charles, in the fullness of time, Prince William will take the throne, and then Prince George. And so it's hereditary. It is passed on from person to person. And that's what happened with the priesthood. But today, the priesthood is a calling, or supposed to be a calling, that you are called into the ministry. And it doesn't follow that just because your father was a minister, that you will be a pastor as well. But back then, that's how it happened. It was passed on to son, and so it went on. We can go a little bit deeper if you're interested. I mean, some people might be interested in history, but others can go to sleep now. Then, if you're not interested in history, let's go back somewhere, haven't we? So, if we start with we can start back at Genesis 1:1, can't we? In the beginning, God. You know, someone said, when you're looking at, if God is from eternity to eternity, if God is, in the beginning God created, what was God doing before he created? If God's infinite, what was he doing before he created? And Martin Luther was having an open air meeting. And Martin Luther from the Reformation, the 1500s, was talking about Jesus and the need for salvation. And someone said, Martin Luther, what was God doing before he created the world? And Martin Luther thought for a moment. What was God doing? If he's from infinity to infinity, from eternity to... What was he doing before he created? And Martin Luther says, before God created the world, he created hell for people who ask daft questions. Well, I suppose it was a daft question. But we'll start at Abraham, okay? Abraham was called by God to be the father of the nation. So we have Abraham and then his son Isaac and then his son Jacob. It's Jacob who I want to look at. Jacob, the man whose name means twister, means deceiver, a scandalous man, a man who robbed his brother Esau of his birthright. For all those of you who call your children Jacob, that's what you're calling him, deceiver, scandalous, a bad lot. Apologies if anybody has got a son or a grandson called Jacob, but that's what you're calling him. And he met God. He got converted, if you like, in the Old Testament sense of the word. He had that experience of meeting with God. And God changed his name. He said, no longer are you going to be called Jacob. No longer are you going to be called Twister. No longer are you going to be called, you remember Jacob's ladder, the angels ascending. No longer are you going to be a deceiver, a bad lot. I'm going to call your name from now on Israel, Prince with God. You're going to be called Israel. And he, from his clan, the tribe of Israel, the tribe of Gath, the tribe of Marge. You know, the they took the country name from their founder, if you like, from Israel, Jacob, whose name was changed to Israel. And they had a checkered history, the Abrahamic, Abraham, Isaac and Jacob. They got taken down into Egypt, punished. They wandered around in the wilderness for 40 years in Sinai, and then it was time for them to come into the land of Canaan. They were going to rechristen it Israel, the land of Canaan. They were going to call it Israel, the Israel that we know today. And they came in. And when they went in, Israel, Jacob, was dead many years now, but he had 12 sons. And his 12 sons, they kept in their own clans, their own, even wandering in the wilderness for 40 years, they still kept themselves to themselves. They still kept with their own kind, if you like. And they went into the promised land. And they still stayed in their tribes. And the tribe of Dan, for example, the tribe of Dan, right there up in the north. And Asher, the tribe belonging to Asher. These are the 12 sons of Jacob. And in the south, there was Judah and Benjamin. And in the east of the water, the tribe of Reuben is in the east, isn't it? Out in Thailand. And the tribe of Ephraim in the center. And in the when they kept themselves to themselves. And they all had counties, if you like, various counties that they kept themselves in. And so we look in Bible history, in the Bible, and we look and we think, well, where's these 12? And when we count these 12 tribes, we discover there's only 11. One of Jacob, Israel, one of Israel's sons, he didn't get any land. They weren't given any, they weren't apportioned any land. What was all that about? Didn't they get any land? The tribe of Levi didn't get any land. The Levites were the priests. And the idea was that instead of all the priests, all the religious people being in one place all together, they were to be spread out over the whole country. So there'll be a religious place here and a religious... Like today we have a railway station covers an area. So there's a railway station in Barnstable. There's a railway station in Exeter, there's a railway station in Durham, there's a, just so that everywhere has access to a railway station. And that was the idea of the priesthood. The Levites, the tribe of Levi, wouldn't have a set land themselves, but they would be spread out over the whole county. Someone said at a minister's conference, you know, he said, all you ministers up together like a load of manure. That's not a nice thing to say, is it? Like a load of manure, very obnoxious, very, but spread out evenly over the whole land, you're doing a lot of good. And that was the idea of the Levites, to spread them out evenly over the whole land so that they could do their religious over the whole land. And one such religious place was a place called Shiloh. And this is the place that a couple of weeks ago you looked at in 1 Samuel chapter 1. If you've got your Bibles, I said, now's the time to look at 1 Samuel chapter 1. There was a certain man, a Zuphite from Ephraim, from the central western bit of Israel, the tribe of Ephraim. His name was Elkanah, the son of all these other go back, and he had two wives, one called Hannah and the other was called Peninnah. Peninnah had children, but Hannah, she didn't have any children. And back then, I know people choose sometimes not to have children, but back then it was a shame, it was a cause of grief, it was regarded as a punishment, really. And so year after year, this man, and he went up from his town to worship and to sacrifice to the Lord at this religious center called Shiloh, this place where in the middle of the county of Ephraim there was a Levite place, there was a religious place, and that's where Hophni and Phinehas, the two sons of Eli, were priests. He went to this religious, this important Levitical town called Shiloh, and it was important, was Shiloh. It was like the Canterbury Cathedral, the York Minster of Ephraim. It was where there were some religious artifacts, in that the very Ark of the Covenant was housed in Shiloh. It was really, King David later changed his religious centre to Jerusalem, 25 miles south, but at this time, Shiloh was the place. You had to go to Shiloh. That was the important place. And it was at this religious centre that Elkanah and his two wives, Hannah and Peninnah, they came to sacrifice. And look what happened. Chapter 1, verse 12. It says this. Chapter 1, verse 12. We'll start at verse 9. One day when they'd finished eating and drinking in Shiloh, Hannah stood up. Eli the priest was sitting on a chair at the Lord's table. In bitterness of soul, Hannah wept much and prayed. She was barren. She wanted a child, and so she's praying and weeping. As she made a vow, and she said, Lord, if you'll only look upon my misery and remember me, give me a son. I'll give him back to you for all the days of his life. And she kept on praying in verse 12. And Eli the priest, the religious man, he looked at her mouth, because she was praying in her heart and her lips were moving, but her voice was not heard. Her voice was not heard. She was in such agony that she couldn't get the words out. She was struggling. Still in the background, remember what the one-minute sermon was? The one-minute sermon was, there was scandal in the church, in the priesthood. God had said, if you don't alter your ways, you'll be punished. And that's what happened. Well, this is the scandal. She had to say to Eli, don't call me a wicked woman. That's what he said to her. You wicked, get rid of it. He said to her, verse 14, how long will you keep on getting drunk? Get rid of your wine. No, she said. Hannah replied, I'm a deeply troubled woman, verse 15. I haven't been drinking wine or beer. I'm pouring out my soul to the Lord. Don't take me for a wicked woman. I'm praying. I'm in such agony of heart. Just reminds me, I'm sorry I'm pointing out Mark here, but just to lighten the, because this is very, you know, people who'd, on Wednesday of this week, I was asked to go to a funeral of a little, a stillborn baby, and they had a celebrant actually to do it, but the couple said, we want a priest there. So the funeral director said, you're a priest, you go. And and to see the agony of this young couple and a little coffin, and apologies if that strikes a note with anybody here, but you'll get the feeling of the agony of this and I'm trying to lighten the mood, but I'm making it heavier now. But it just reminded me seeing Mark here, because we have a Mark introduced me to a friend of his a couple of years ago, and he was just like Anna. His lips would move, but he wouldn't talk, and he would wobble his lips, and you're waiting for him to say something, but his lips were just moving about. Anyway, that's by the by. I shouldn't have probably said that. But there was scandal in the amongst the priesthood, and it would help us to know how the people worshipped back then in these religious centres of Shiloh. And how they worshipped back then involved meat and sacrifice. And all the rules of how they did their church is in the book called Leviticus. And because the way they did all their worship was so complicated, we very rarely hear sermons about Leviticus today, how the Levites, the priests, did their religion. And I guess if we had someone, an alien, suddenly landed here and asked us to explain our religious feasts, I think we'd have a job to explain Christmas, for example. How would we explain Christmas? Well, we'd say the way we celebrate it. How would we say, well, we all gather together as families, we buy the biggest turkey that you can ever find, and Brussels sprouts by the dozen, and Christmas pudding, and we have this Christmas turkey, and then we have it again the next day, Boxing Day, and then we eat it again in a dinner. And for the 12 days of Christmas, we have the 12 different curry recipes, different turkey recipes. And that's how we try and explain our. And then we move on to Lent. And how do we explain Lent? Well, now, it's not just the 12, this is 40 days now. And for 40 days, we don't have any. We fast, we don't have any chocolate. And then comes Easter, and what we do then, we gorge ourselves on chocolate. We get Easter eggs, and it takes some explaining, doesn't it? And so the Jewish, the Israelite religion takes some explaining. And that's why we don't look at the book of Leviticus, because we can't really understand what it's all about. There's the burnt offering, which is, this is all by background, by the way, just to, you can still be asleep if you want, where there's a burnt offering. A bull, a ram, or a bird. There's a grain offering. There's a peace offering. There's a sin offering. There's a guilt offering. And in these laws, in the book of Leviticus, provision is made that from these religious festivals, the priest is allowed part of the offering. The tithes and the offering, the priest has part of it. It's all provided for. The burnt offering is a bull. Now, from the burnt offering, the priest doesn't get much, because it's a whole burnt offering. So it's a bull or a sheep, and he just gets the skin. So the priest, the provision made for the Levites, the priesthood, they would get some leather. They'd get the skin of the bull, or they'd get the sheep's fleece. They'd get a sheepskin coat out of it. That's all they'd get. They wouldn't get anything else. Then the grain offering, well, that was normally a cake that was presented to the... And it says in Leviticus, they got any that was left over. Like when you did cooking with your mum, you were able to lick the bowl. Well, that's what the priests got. They got any that was left over. The peace offering, that was any unblemished... And it's all in Leviticus, and I'm just trying to... It's a difficult book, so I'm just doing it as quickly as I can. It was any unblemished animal. And what the priest would get, he would get the breast meat, and he would get the right thigh. And that would be waved. Fancy waving the meat. It was called a wave offering. It's a strange thing to explain, as we would find difficulty explaining our religious traditions and party hats and Christmas crackers. We find that difficult to explain to somebody from outside. And so it's difficult for us to understand that waving this offering, the right thigh of a sheep or a goat, the sin offering, that was it was the offal, really, that was sacrificed, the liver, the kidneys, and the fat. That's what was put on the offal of a young bull or a goat. The priest had the rest. And similarly, the trespass offering, the fat was burnt and the rest. It always was a ram. The fat was burnt, but the rest of the meat was for the priest. Now, you won't remember any of this detail, but listen, let me reread what Harrison read. Chapter 2 and verse 12. Okay? So all that by way of background. So hopefully, 1 Samuel 2 verse 12, Eli's sons were wicked men. They had no regard for the Lord. Now it was the practice of the priests with the people that whenever anyone offered a sacrifice, while the meat was being boiled, the servant of the priest would come with a three-pronged fork in his hand, and he would plunge it into the boiling water, and the priest would take for himself whatever the fork brought up. This is how they treated all the Israelites who came to Shiloh, this religious center, even before the fat that should have been burnt, even though the fat was burnt, the servant of the priest would come and say to the man who was sacrificing, give the priest some of this meat to roast. Don't want it boiled. Give it. He wants to roast it. Leave the fat on. He won't accept boiled meat, only raw. If they let the fat be burned first, let's burn the fat, and then you can take what you want. The servant would then answer, no, hand it over now, and if you don't, I will take it by force. The sin of these young men was great because they were treating the Lord's offering with contempt. This was the scandal of Eli's sons. They were entitled to a good share, but they demanded the raw meat to roast with the fat. This is what the unnamed, and again Harrison read this for us in verse 29, this unnamed man came and he said, why do you do it? Why do you scorn my sacrifices that I've prescribed in the book of Leviticus? I prescribed all this, I've told you what you should do. Why do you honour your sons more than me, and you're just fattening yourselves on the best cuts of meat, on the choice parts of every offering? You're just getting yourselves fat. You've got plenty. You're being greedy. I will tell you the end of the story, actually, because in chapter 4 and verse 18, we discover that Eli died, and it says he fell off his chair because he was old and heavy. He'd made himself heavy. He'd got used to having this nice meat, and he made himself fat. And when the Philistines came, remember the sermon? There was scandal. They were going to be punished and removed. Well, the punishment came because the Philistines attacked. This is what you look at in the next week and the week after. The Philistines come and attack them, and they actually steal the Ark of the Covenant from Shiloh. They take the religious artifacts. They pinched them, the Philistines. And when news came to Eli, and there he was, sat in his chair. Always seems to be sat on his chair, Eli. And they said, your two sons have died, Hophni and Phinehas. And he probably just shrugged his shoulders. But when he heard that the Ark of the Covenant had been stolen, it says he fell off, chapter 4 and verse 18, if you're following it through, it said he fell off his chair backwards, his neck broke, and he died, for he was an old man and heavy. He'd made himself heavy. There's a lesson there not to swing back on your chairs this morning, isn't there? Especially if you're a bit overweight. But there we are, his neck broke. Punishment came. He'd gotten fat on, what did it say in verse 29, the choice parts of the offering. He got his fingers in the till. But the second part of integrity, being honest, the second part is having strong moral principles. Well, chapter 2 and verse 12 says Eli's sons were wicked men. They had no regard for the Lord. One version says they didn't know the Lord. And so not only were they stealing meat, the meat offerings, they were also sexually abusing these women who served at the entrance to the tent of meeting, to church. These women who paraded themselves in their bikinis. The co-workers, those in the church, if you like, and these priests were sexually abusing with, they were sleeping with their co-workers. There was scandal in the church. And we could be reading this in today's paper, couldn't we, really? There was scandal in the church. And old Eli knew all about it. He knew what his two boys were getting up to. He knew all about it. In fact, verse 22 tells us Eli was very old by now, but he heard about everything his sons were doing, how they slept with the women who served at the entrance to the church, to the tent of meeting. He knew all about it. But he had a bit of a dilemma now, because over the years, he'd got used to his lifestyle of nice meat and getting fat and having everything he wanted. So he got his boys and he just gave them on the wrist, really, and he said, "Boys, be careful." He said, "People are talking. It's the talk of the..." This is what he says, verse 24. I'm not making this up. Verse 24, he says, "Now, my sons, it's not a good report that I hear among the Lord's people." I'm not hearing a good things. But in the next verse, his sons didn't listen to their father. They didn't listen. They laughed at him. He said, "Lord, it's not a good thing what I'm hearing, boys. Be careful, don't..." But they just laughed at him. And remember the one-minute sermon? There was scandal. They'd be punished. And they were. Well, chapter 4, verse 11, which we've already alluded to, Ophni and Phinehas were killed. They were punished. They were removed. So, I've taken a long time. What's the lessons for us then? What's the lessons? What do we learn from this? How does it apply to us today? Well, it applies to us today in the sense that Eli, Ophni and Phinehas, they loved the priesthood. They were so steeped in tradition and ritual, church life if you like, but they didn't know the Lord. And the obvious lesson for us is that we could be so steeped in church. We love the church. We love the rituals. We love all about it, but do we know the Lord? Do we know the Lord? Eli loved doing church, but he had no spiritual discernment. He called Anna a wicked woman. The same word used of his boys. Wicked boys. He had no spiritual. Eli's sons were wicked ones. And another lesson is, it's easy to compromise on sin. Because Eli knew of his son's wickedness. People had told him. He knew all about it. It was the talk of the town. He knew of the sex with the women. He knew of the meat that they were pinching. But he had a dilemma. As we said, if he spoke up, he wouldn't get any meat. He'd just have boiled meat. He wouldn't have nice roast meat, the fat, juicy steaks. He wouldn't have that anymore. And so today's ministers, perhaps, or church leaders, if we compromise, if we speak up and name sin and challenge people, the danger is, well, numbers are going to go down. The gift aid is going to go down. My living's not going to be quite what once it was. My wages will be dire. I might have to go part-time. I might have to do outside. Things might get difficult for me. And so I'll just go with it and let as a friend of mine says, and so the lunatics come and rule the asylum. And I'll just take a bat and let them get on with it. A question of integrity. The quality of being honest and having strong moral principles. We're not perfect. David was a great leader. Psalm 78 and verse 70, verse 72, sorry, Psalm 78 and verse 72, it says, David shepherded the people with integrity. He shepherded them with integrity, with strong moral principles, no scandal. But he slept with Bathsheba. And so for all of us, whatever our past has been, there is a way back to God, and we can be people of integrity in the days that lie ahead. The quality of being honest and having strong moral principles. Been a tough ask this morning. In fact, Jeff, as I said, he sent me an email. Oh, no, I'm just speaking in the vestry. He sent me an email and he said, I'm sorry that you've been given this passage. He said, it's a tough one. He acknowledged that. It is a tough one. It's a tough ask. It's a tough hear. It's tough preparing. But it's in the Word of God and it's valuable for us each one as we progress in the days that lie ahead. iPad thing, whatever, to find out any hymns that went with 1 Samuel chapter 2, and there aren't any. That's why we've made them up this morning, the ones that some old fairies. So it might not apply, but we're going to sing our final hymn, 708. To God be the glory, great things he has done, so loved he the world, that he gave us his Son, who yielded his life an atonement for sin, and opened the life gates that all may go in. 708.